Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Listeners, we have a very special episode for you today.
I think it's very special.
It's super special.
It's so special.
It's special.
And you know who else is special? That's our new freaking patrons.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And we got to give them a special shout out because they're so goddamn special. Starting with our vessel heads. We have a new vessel head joining the crew, boarding the ship with us this week.
All aboard, all aboard.
All aboard, jibs and stuff.
Dibs and stuff.
And they are Anita G. Thank you, Anita. We love you unconditionally forever. Starting now.
Starting now. Thank you. And we love you. And we also love the newest members of Tony fucking Collette's inner circle, the apex of the podcast experience, and of friendship with the one and only Tony Collette. And those new members are Adam, Crystal Urich, Amanda Schaefer, and Joel Miyamoto. Welcome. We love you so much unconditionally forever starting now.
Forever starting now. We also have a couple upgrades this week. Thank you guys so much. They got a little bit of experience with the Patreon, wanted a little bit more, dug a little deeper into the experience. And that is Carol Louise and Trice Sanders. Thank you guys so much. We love you forever starting like a while ago.
Yeah.
But it's continuing.
We've been loving you. But here we go. More love.
More and more.
And we hope you guys love this episode. It's like we said, incredibly special.
Very special. And here it is for you to love.
This is Emily,
Henley,
and Sammy.
And you're listening to Too Scary, Didn't Watch.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to Too Scary, Didn't Watch, the horror movie recap podcast for those too scared to watch for themselves. I'm Emily, and I am too scared to watch scary movies.
I'm Henley, and I'm also too scared to watch scary movies.
I'm Sammy, and I love watching scary movies, and I love telling people about them.
And she's so good at it. We love her. What would we do without her?
I love that we are like physically incapable of making it through one of these intros without being like, yeah, and it's good and like we can't just like say it.
We have to. I have to validate it every time.
Yeah,
every time.
We like what we like each other, and we like
the premise of this podcast that we made.
Hey, if you don't love, if you love what you do, you never work a day in your life.
Amen.
And this is not a job. What is up with us?
Well, similar to basically what I talk about every week, this week I watched yet another TV show. I mean, let's be honest, I watched multiple TV shows, but I'll only talk about one TV show that I watched.
Okay, fair.
It's a Sin. It's recently premiered on HBO Max. For anyone who subscribes to HBO Max, just watch it right now. Just turn this podcast off and watch It's a Sin.
Henley?
No.
Honestly, it's so good. I think it's the best show of the year so far. It's amazing. It's written by Russell Davies. He's the creator. He did Queer as Folk and Years and Years. He's been around for a while. And it's just like unbelievable. It follows five young men in it throughout the 80s as they're experiencing the AIDS crisis in London. And I got to tell you, you will cry, but it is also extremely joyful and like very life affirming and beautiful and so well crafted. And I just loved it. I just loved it. I can't recommend it.
Did you watch all of it?
Yeah.
Is it a week to week?
It's only five episodes.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I blew through it.
I'm not judging you. I just wanted to know if you'd made it all the way through.
Only five episodes. Oh man, you guys. Okay, so I live in a studio apartment. Obviously, I've talked about that before. And Tim.
Obviously.
Obviously.
Tim was like in class and in the other corner of the room and kept turning around because I was just silently like trying not to make weeping. So much noise, crying, just crying so loudly. And he kept turning around being like, are you okay?
Like, you're trying to not be distracting was so distracting.
It was so distracting. Anyway, that's what I did this week. That was the highlight of my week, was crying, watching It to Sin.
Oh, boy.
Wow.
Big week.
Wow.
Big week. And hey, guess what I did this week? I also watched a lot of TV.
Did you?
I did. I watched all of The Undoing in, I think, one sitting.
Oh, yeah. That's a good
Dang,
one.
I gotta watch it. I gotta do that.
It's not that it's like the best show ever. It's just like,
but it's like captivating. I don't want the best show ever right now. Like that, It to Sin sounds like more than my brain can maybe do right now. I want like a fine show that I can't stop watching.
Like Riverdale.
Okay, no, Riverdale's an incredible show, Henley, but I see what you're trying to say.
And then I also watched Behind Her Eyes in one sitting, two sittings. And man, I won't say anything spoilery, but I will say that there is a twist that is the most unpredictable twist I think I've ever seen.
Wait, okay, so I'm four episodes into Behind Her Eyes, and I can't wait to know what this twist is.
It's
I'm
so
amped.
Fucking crazy, Henley. Prepare yourself.
Oh my God. What could it be?
Again, I won't say that the show is like very good. It's certainly
fine.
What's the TV equivalent of a page turner? You got to keep pressing next episode.
Yeah, it's very captivating.
Well, there should be a term for that.
Bingeable?
I guess that's the term.
I guess
yeah,
that's
bingeable.
The term, yeah.
man, Henley, I can't wait to hear your thoughts about it.
I'll text you immediately. I'm sure I'm going to watch it after we're done with this
Dang,
podcast.
Maybe I'm going to watch it after we're done.
I'm sure I'll finish it
tonight.
I probably
will. I'll probably watch Mission Impossible again.
It's a good option too.
Yeah.
What about you, Emily?
I did watch two Mission Impossibles this week.
Okay, nice.
And I'm almost caught up on Riverdale. Oh my God, Sammy, are you caught up?
I'm caught up, baby. You know it.
You're caught up? Okay, so you're a little bit ahead of me, but that's good because that means I'm going to text you because already I'm like, this is the best thing that's ever been made. I was freaking out last night. But I'm not going to talk about a show. I took a note in my phone about what I want to talk about today because I didn't want to forget. And it's stupid, but here we go. So the other night I was falling asleep and I put on Sleep Cove, which Henley has talked about. Sleep Cove podcast to fall asleep. And so I'm like half paying attention, right? You're like sort of listening. You're basically just hearing like the sounds. But I heard, so I was listening and he says like a little part of the story, maybe like three sentences, right? And then all of a sudden, he says the exact same three sentences. Like, I hear the exact paragraph of the story that I've already heard again. And there were no jumps. There were no skips. I'm just laying in bed. And here's the thing. I am half asleep. But this is also not the first time this has happened to me when I've been listening to a thing falling asleep where I'll be like, I already just heard this and I'm like 100% certain. I like to the point where I'm like, I know what they're gonna say next and I just heard it. And I think that this is proof of one of two things. That we are inside of a simulation and I am in real time experiencing a glitch. I am in real time comprehending
okay
a recurring moment.
Okay. I'm on board.
All right.
Or I am in a moment of clarity experiencing the fact that all time is happening now.
Wait. Hold on.
That wasn't clear. I think I'm done.
Wait, did you rewind and listen again and it happened again?
No. This is like two separate occasions in my life where I've had this moment where I'm like, I know what he's going to say next because I just heard it. And it's like, doesn't make sense for the story to complete. It's like, it'd be like if I was like, hi, Henley, how are you? I really like that shirt. Hi, Henley, how are you? I really like that shirt. And you were like, what? You just said that. It's like that moment.
So it's like you had a tiny, tiny premonition of what they were going to say.
and you manifested the premonition into the podcast.
It's like
Wait. I'm confused about some of the logistics here. Did it actually
happen? Me too, Henley.
Did it actually happen twice? Or are you saying you just heard it and you think maybe it happened twice? Did it actually happen twice is what I'm wanting to know. Do you know what I mean?
Did the Sleep Cove man say the same thing twice for real?
Yeah, for real.
I don't think so. Why would he?
So you
but
think-
I heard it twice. So I either moved forwards and backwards in time. Or the simulation glitched for just like a second. And it repeated the thing for me. But my brain was aware that it was happening. And those are the only possibilities.
I agree.
Honestly, I'm on board for either one.
I don't know, you guys. And maybe today, later, I'll go back and I'll re-listen to that exact episode of Sleep Cove and be like, what is he? Does he say the same thing?
Because if he doesn't, either you're in a Christopher Nolan film and time doesn't mean anything, or you're proving Elon Musk correct and we are just living in a simulation.
Well, he's not the only one who thinks that.
He's the
original. I don't want it to be his thing.
He is an asshole and we hate him. But
we hate him.
He does
but
say
he's
it
not
a lot.
The only one who thinks that.
You think it do.
I think it do. I can tell you at least one more person who thinks it, and it's me. I don't know. So that's what's up with me. Was that worth it? Taking a note in my phone to make sure to talk about it?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think so.
Great.
I've got a lot to think about later. I don't have time to watch that TV show anymore. I've got to.
No, you've got to think about the realities of time.
I've got to do some research.
Well, another thing that we've got to do is talk about this week's movie. Mm-hmm. And this week's movie is Lucky. It came out just this past week on Shudder.
Ooh.
Excuse me, you can stream it on Shudder. Shudder Original. Shudder, are you listening?
Shudder.com.
Shudder.com/Lucky. I don't know if that's how you find it, but no. Maybe. And it is directed by Natasha Kermani, written by Bria Grant, starring Bria Grant, Hunter C. Smith, and Dhruv Uday Singh. And wow, we have a freaking guest this week, and you better believe I've already said his name because he's in this freaking movie. It's welcome to the podcast, Dhruv.
Thank you. What a treat. Thanks for having me. I'm a big fan, so this is of the show I'm in. So thank you. What a treat.
Dhruv, the treat is ours.
The
and
treat ours, is ours.
Ours alone.
We are so excited you're here. This is the first time we have ever had a guest on the podcast who was in the movie that we're talking about.
Yes, mm-hmm. You mentioned that, and I was concerned about, is it going to be weird for me to recap it since I'm in it? Because you know that every time I talk about scenes I'm in, I'm going to describe them quite flatteringly for the actor. Yeah. You know what
yes.
I mean?
Yes, for the mm-hmm. actor. Whoever he may be.
We don't know him. Just saying, get ready for that.
It's not an unbiased retelling.
No. I also do, I hope this isn't too, what's the word, like heavy-handed promo-y, but just because, you know, it's an indie flick, and indie flicks really live and die on word of mouth, especially mm-hmm. in the week or two after they come out. Just please go see it if you're listening to this. It's great.
Yes!
We are at 91% on Rotten Tomatoes out of like
that
44 reviews.
Is amazing.
It's getting good reviews. Shudder has like a free trial, so you can go watch it on that. And I don't know, support it. It's great. It's like it was a blast to be in, and I think you'll have fun watching it. So watch it. And if
watch it.
If you don't want spoilers, you know, pause this, watch it, come back.
Exactly. If you're brave enough, watch it, then listen. And if you're scared, listen, then watch. An option yes. for everybody.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Or you can do what Emily is going to do, which is pretend she's already seen it and then be like, how did I just watch it already? And then I saw it again.
Yeah, you can experience time all at once and both listen and watch in the same moment.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Dhruv, what's up with you this week? Any sort of metaphysical, surreal experiences or...
Oh. Or TV shows that you like.
Or TV shows.
Yeah, definitely more of the latter, I would say, than metaphysical. I'm trying to think if I've had any like crazy metaphysical experiences lately. I have had sort of what you're talking about, the deja vu thing, Emily. And also that will, interestingly, I think, play a little bit into the movie we're going to talk about.
Ooh.
There's some time fuckery happening.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't know if I've had that recently... per se. I have, I guess. Are you guys on that Clubhouse app by any chance?
No, but everybody is.
What's Clubhouse?
Listening to that app feels a lot like having that deja vu metaphysical experience over and over. It's
okay,
a bunch
okay.
of people just saying the same shit. It's not.
What's its purpose? I mean, connecting, I guess, right? Like,
it's kind of the equivalent of like what you guys are doing now as a podcast, but it's what like albums are to live shows are what podcasts are to Clubhouse. You know, it's like live. It's not recorded. It's just like spontaneous kind of, and you can participate in some of the rooms. I think the most popular rooms, honestly, are like borderline dating app rooms where you just go on and people try to shoot their shots at each other.
I mean, it feels like. Eventually, that's what every social media experience becomes for a large portion of the users, right? Like,
yeah.
Especially now. Come on. I mean, what are people doing? Yep.
Do you need like an invite to get onto Clubhouse or
you do.
Something?
If you guys want them, I have like 9 invites. I'll send you them. Ooh. Right now.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. We are VIP.
We're in.
You won't thank me. You'll hate it. In
I mean,
days,
it does but... actually sound pretty bad.
It's like if Twitter had sound. You know what I mean?
Oh,
no one wants to hear that shit.
Oh, God. That's awful.
That's the worst way to describe a thing that I can imagine. Mm-hmm. Well. Then no thank you, Drew.
It's our favorite time of the week, baby. It's cocktail hour. This week, we will be mixing up a little Lucky Lily margarita to be accompanying our screening. For this drink, you will need 2 spoonfuls of honey, 2 fluid ounces of tequila, 1 fluid ounce of pineapple juice, 3/4 of an ounce of lime juice, and a few grinds of black pepper. To make this drink, you will stir the honey with the tequila in the base of a shaker to dissolve it. Add the other ingredients and shake with ice in a super fine strain into a chilled glass. The garnish is a pineapple wedge dusted with pepper. You can serve this in a coupe glass. All right, cheers.
Drew, do you like scary movies?
I do like scary movies. I think I'm kind of like y'all sound to be, which I'm kind of squeamish about him. Like I didn't grow up. I'm an only child, and I think
me too.
Horror movies, you are too. And I don't know. For some people, I guess they love it. For me, being in a house alone because I had so much time alone as a kid, watching something scary like triples how scary it is because you can't talk to someone. Whereas sharing a horror experience is fun because you're both kind of jumping at the same time and stuff. So I didn't grow up with it. Though now I will say some of my favorite movies are kind of horror thrillery, even though they're not my genre of choice before.
Well, you're a big Hitchcock fan, yes?
Big Hitchcock fan. And then his like Brian De Palma kind of ran with Hitchcock and made it a lot of horror. Like his horror shit I kind of love from the 70s, like Carrie and Sisters and Dress to Kill is one of my favorite movies. Even though, like, by 2021 standards, that I think that's the only movie that is offensive to every possible group of people. I've never seen it. It's unbelievable. But it's so good. It's like a movie that you should hate on every level, but it's really good. Yeah, so I like horror. I don't love gore, you know, like super gory horror, but...
Yeah. But, yeah. We hear that a lot here on the pod.
Yeah,
I think it's the people that are, like, really into horror that will openly be like, and I love gore. I think you have to be pretty into horror to also love gore.
Yeah.
Unless, I don't know, maybe there's some people who are like, I don't really like horror, but gore.
I want a gory comedy.
Maybe there's people like that.
There could be.
Drew, was there any horror movie you saw when you were like a kid that traumatized you or like was a horrible experience?
There's a movie that I don't actually know the title of because it was on TV, you know, when this was an age when you didn't select what you watched on TV.
Yeah,
it just
sort of like was in front of your face all of a sudden. Yeah,
exactly. And there was a single scene in it that still haunts me to this day when I think about it. It was this like old, it was probably from the early 90s, like Indian movie, like, but not a Bollywood movie. But when I say that, I don't mean the genre of, but there's a lot of Indian movies that are not kind of song and dancey. So it was like clearly a horror-y one. And there was one scene where a woman is in like a bathtub with her husband and they're having a romantic kind of time. And then she stabs the fuck out of him. And as the blood comes towards her in the water, she starts pushing it away from her because she doesn't want it to touch her. And I remember that one scene like sent chills. I think it ruined, it probably... All my issues in relationships probably stem from that one.
That's terrible. Wow. Have you ever tried to track down the film?
No, because I don't know. I've Googled it. It was probably some small, obscure, I don't know, Hindi movie. Yeah. I don't know what it was, but I think about that scene and I get chills.
Imagine stabbing someone in a bathtub you're also in and thinking you wouldn't get it on you.
Yeah, exactly. That doesn't make any sense.
Come on, not
well planned. Like,
how do you think this is gonna work? I love to stab, but ew, don't touch me.
I love to stab.
I love to stab.
Oh, I love to stab. Some people love to stab.
I can't think of a specific movie. I mean, as I got older, obviously, like the classics, you know, The Exorcist and The Shining and stuff, I think are really chilled me to the bone. But I was a little older by that point. Mm-hmm. Yeah, as a kid, it's just that one. Yeah,
I'm surprised how many people we've talked to on this podcast, which maybe isn't that many, but there have been a few people who have talked about like their parents basically accidentally bringing them or on purpose bringing them to a horror movie that was they were like way too young to see and seeing it in the theaters. It's like with a parent that just feels like.
I do remember though that very specific because I'm still scared now, but I was so scared as a kid of like seeing anything scary. That like fear of you used to only channel change, right? Like that was the only way you would ever land on anything you wanted to watch. And like at night, or if like, you know, my sister, I was younger siblings, so if she was like doing something and I'm sitting and it's dark and I'm just like flipping channels and all of a sudden you'd see something scary, I'd be like, ah, and I'd like freak out and like turn it off as soon as I could. Like it wouldn't even change a channel. I just had to like go away. It's a scary time.
Yeah, channel surfing, risky.
Channel
risky
surfing
stuff.
Is scary. Yeah. But you know where you don't have to channel surf? Shudder.com.
True. Very true.
It's true. Yeah. We yell at Shudder to sponsor us a lot. So just if you know anyone at Shudder.
If you know anyone at Shudder.
Okay. When I like post this thing on my gram, I'll for sure tag them and I feel like they'll notice.
They gotta listen to you.
They've got to.
Yeah. I've been in one movie.
I'm in the movie.
I feel like they don't sponsor anybody, but we'll be the first.
It just takes one.
Actually, I was listening to a Bill. I forgot to tell you guys this. I was listening to a Bill Simmons podcast. I think the Rewatchables. I can't remember what it was. But it's
sponsored
from like
by Shudder.
But it's from like 2 years ago, and it was sponsored by Shudder. And I was
okay, it's possible. Deal with Bill Simmons.
It's possible. We're gonna get there, baby.
Come
that's
on.
Gonna be
it.
That's gonna be us one day.
We're just as big as Bill
We're
Simmons
just
for
as
sure.
Big.
Okay, should we watch the trailer? Do we have other questions?
I think we should. So we're gonna do our little trivia. Now is where we normally do trivia, right?
Mm. Yeah.
You'd think I know how our own podcast goes. We're gonna end because we want to chat with Dhruv about the behind the scenes goodies. Mm. So right now, let's watch this freaking trailer.
Someone outside.
Honey, that's the man.
He comes every night and tries to kill us.
We're just gonna leave him?
Oh, I'm sure he's already gone.
You said a man comes into our house
every night and tries to kill us.
Hey, pull it together.
What?
Alone, isolated, a man could appear at any time.
He keeps coming back. He should be dead. This man could be anywhere.
I just don't know what I would do in that situation.
Sure is scary.
Very.
I'm sorry, did I come at a bad time? I tried to call, but...
I told you that something supernatural was happening. Would you believe me?
We are being attacked. There is no rationalizing it. There is no saving us. So get used to it.
Cool.
Whoa.
Spooky.
That was crazy. I was not expecting that. What a wild idea for a horror movie. What the fuck?
It is a very original premise, I will say. I haven't really seen, I've watched a lot of movies and horror shit. And I'm like, when I read the script, to get, you know, when I was first like approached about it, I was like, I don't know where this is going, but I love this setup.
Yeah, I have no idea where the hell it's going. Like, what is up with your character? What is going on?
Yeah, what's up with your character?
What is going on?
Oh, wow. Oh, I'm very
I'm
excited.
So excited.
This is when I will say that I was like, I want to watch it. This is one that after I hear it, I will be able to. But it just looks like, it just looks really cool. I'm excited to hear about it.
Is it rated R or PG-13? That influences my... Does it say anywhere?
You'll only watch PG-13 movies.
Yeah, I don't watch PG-13 movies.
I don't know. I was pushing for a triple...
Do they rate movies anymore?
Yeah, like online.
Do they rate it if it's online?
I don't know.
Drew, were you about to say you were pushing for XXX?
Yeah. But that was more for a scene I was pitching. That was like...
You did a lot of pitching on set.
Yeah, they said no. It was
that scene got cut, yeah.
Yeah.
Not rated. Not rated, Henley.
Not rated.
Wait, doesn't that mean that it's like really bad though?
Could mean it. Did Drew Sheen make it in the movie? I guess we'll have to find out.
It could be like, you know, in the early 2000s when all those like very frat boy comedies were really popular for a while, and they always had like an unrated DVD where it was like 2 extra minutes of boobs or whatever.
Yes. That shit? Extended cut.
Yeah, extended, I think, cut. Not rated is different from unrated.
That's right.
Unrated is a rating, if you know what I mean.
Yep.
Ooh, baby.
Yeah.
So yeah, Drew, take it away. Yep. Give us the unrated version if you can.
Okay, you guys, I just learned a really wild fact that I need to share with you. I know I'm not usually a fact person, but did you know that Americans pay about 2 times as much for their wine as the rest of the world? Why? Because laws dating back to Prohibition ensure the right of wholesalers to make big margins. Okay, look, we got to be getting these wine deals that we deserve. And guess what? I have a solution for you, because this podcast is sponsored by Naked Wines. Naked Wines is a subscription service that seamlessly connects you to the finest independent winemakers on the planet. So you get a box of the market's best quality wines, however often you'd like, for a fraction of the price you'd normally pay in stores. Use our code TOOSCARY for the code and password at nakedwines.com to get their incredible deal of 6 bottles for just $39.99. I recently really loved a bottle that I got from Naked Wines of Chardonnay, and I'm not usually a big Chardonnay person, but I'm getting into it. You know, crisp, buttery Chardonnay is actually quite, quite nice. And also the least acidic white wine, just FYI, if you're a little heartburn sufferer like me who refuses to give wine up, that might be a way to go. And I love just being able to try things that I wouldn't normally pick out for myself, because I get these incredible variety boxes of wonderful bottles at, again, a fraction of the price. And how does Naked Wines do it? Well, Naked Wines connects winemakers and wine drinkers directly, allowing for vineyard to your door delivery at up to 60% off what you would pay in store. By cutting out the traditional retail middleman costs, winemakers can pass those savings on hundreds of top quality award-winning wines to you without skimping on quality. It's such a good deal to get Naked Wines. I mean, price, yes, variety, knowing that you're getting wines directly from independent winemakers is just so, so wonderful. They've got a great quiz where you can give them the descriptors that you like in your wine so that each shipment is tailored to your tastes. So there really is no reason not to give it a try. Head to nakedwines.com/too scary and click enter voucher in the top right and put in too scary for both the code and password to get 6 bottles of wine for just $39.99 with shipping included. That's $100 off and less than $7 per bottle. That's nakedwines.com/too scary and use the code and password too scary and grab 6 bottles for just $39.99. One last time, that's nakedwines.com/too scary, code and password too scary for $100 off your first 6 bottles.
All right. So we, Sammy, I know you've seen it, so please feel free to correct me, because also I may be getting some details mixed up in my head.
Okay. I'm going to feel real weird correcting you about that. But I'll do my best.
Mostly if they're performance notes on how Dhruv explains what he was doing.
Yeah.
That's not how I interpreted it, actually.
Great. Yeah. That'll be me. Perfect.
That'll be great. It will be hard for me not to critique one scene in particular. When I watched it, I was like, oh man, I made a choice and it was the wrong choice acting.
Oh
was.
No. Anyway, okay. I mean, for what it's worth, I thought you were great and I don't know what part you're talking about. So there you go. Okay,
there we go. Good. Honestly, more of a critique on the director, I would say.
So we opened by meeting May, who is the self-help author played by Bria Grant. And she's, she's got this book out called Go It Alone, kind of a bit of a symbolic title, let's say. And she's doing okay, but her publisher's like a little concerned about her numbers being low. She's going on these little kind of tours. You know, she's not doing quite as well as they'd expect with selling out her book. Shit, I can't believe I'm blanking on the second scene of the movie.
It's honestly really hard to retell a movie. I will just say
it is
really hard to retell a movie.
And especially this one, I think, because this movie has a lot of emotional logic and dream logic-y stuff. So even though we're seeing a scene, we'll see like a little flash of something else, or we'll see little kind of interstitials where it's just kind of mood, you know? So right. Okay.
Well, and also I bet like having been in the film, you might not have filmed it in order. And so there might be a chronological thing where you're like, well, was this first? It's tough.
We filmed this super quick also because it was just so low budget. So we did it.
Yeah,
like wildly quick, but yeah.
Second, so after she like goes to see her publisher, it's her in the parking garage, and
that's right.
She's like headed to her car, and kind of has a box of her books with her, drops it, and hears like a scream in the distance, like a woman's scream, and kind of looks around, doesn't see anything. And then gets into the car and drives home.
And it's a scene of, you know, it's a, at least from the online response of women who've watched the movie and friends of mine, and of course Bria and Natasha, it's a very, I think for many women, a very relatable moment when you're alone in a parking garage and you're
parking
just like,
garages are terrifying.
They're very scary.
Yes, exactly. So she goes home. She pulls up, and her husband. Well, this, let's just say, there's this sort of, I don't know, rakish, you know, devil may care kind of charming, but in a roguish way.
Very attractive, but doesn't act like he's very humble.
Exactly, mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah. You know, put together, but with a nothing to lose attitude. Greets her. She goes in, so she meets her husband Ted. She goes in, and they seem to have a bit of a playful thing going on. They eat some ice cream and watch TV together, like a lot of couples do. She finds a bite loaded with chocolate chips, and he's like, "I don't know. I think you mistake what you like for the stuff I like. There's something there." Talk about her book tour and what's going on with that. And we know we get the impression she's been on tour before. She's been out. Gone for a little bit of a plant over there. And then she finds this little shard of glass on the coffee table and notices, like, what the hell is this from? She's like, someone could get hurt with that. And Ted, her husband, leans over and looks at her with a bit of a strange intonation and says, yeah, that could hurt somebody. We're not quite sure why he's looking at her that way. And of course, we're distracted by the glint in his sort of deep brown eyes that are, I don't know, distracting. I'm sorry, I should stop doing this.
No, this is the stuff. This is what we want.
This is why you don't get someone in a movie to summarize it, because it's like, yeah, the movie's basically about this husband guy, and then like a bunch of other shit happens.
He's the main character.
Yeah. The one thing that sticks with me are the soulful eyes of the protagonist's husband.
Okay, sorry, I'll stop doing that. So there's this like weird energy, though. It's like, why is he kind of focusing on that? Why is he saying it that way? We don't really know. So then we cut to nighttime, yeah, and they're they're in bed together.
Going to bed.
They're going to bed. And this is something, I think we saw this part in the trailer early on, right? They're in bed together, and she hears something and is awoken from her slumber and kind of stumbles over to the to their window and sees just this kind of in the moonlight, this man standing there looking up at their bedroom window. But he's got it's not quite a mask. It's more like if his features were all distorted, you know, with something, like he's got this weird scarred mouth. It's like a plasticky kind of.
I was
going to
say, it's Emily's least favorite, like almost like a hard plastic, clear
mask.
Exactly. And there's a little, well, I'll give you the behind the scenes tidbit about there's some like little Easter eggs in the mask that come up in the movie. So she looks up and she doesn't know what's up. She runs to bed and she says, Ted, there's a man over there. And she just kind of groggily gets up and says, like, what? What are you talking about? And she says, there's a man, the man in our yard. And Ted says sort of cryptically, yeah, honey, that's the man. Like that's the man who comes to kill us every night. And he's very casual about it. And she doesn't know what the fuck is going on. She's like, what? She doesn't know if he's half asleep. You know, has she heard? Is she having an Emily Gonzalez moment? Has she heard this before? And she doesn't realize it, right?
Could be.
So he wakes up out of bed and he says, well, come on, honey, let's go. You don't want to get caught in bed. That's like the worst place you could be. She's like, what are you talking about? And he kind of gets out of bed and casually picks up a golf club. And he's like, May, what the fuck are you doing? Come on, let's go. We have to run for our lives now. And just like walks out of their bedroom door. And she is fucking stunned, as you would be if your husband suddenly just casually referred to a man in the yard.
And so she's just gotten back from out of town, where it was the assumption earlier, like she's been gone for a little while.
She has done a tour a little while ago, but she's
okay.
But we know this is something she's done for her book. Like she's done some book. Okay. But she's been in town for a little bit now.
Okay.
Seems
like this is the first time this has happened to her.
Yeah, this is the first time this seems seemingly. Yeah. We don't know. I said, there's some...
Okay.
We don't know. But yeah, she doesn't know. To her, this is insane that her husband is acting this way. To him, it's very casual, you know?
It happens all the time. It's very normal and to be expected.
Mm-hmm. It's totally, yeah, exactly. And again, now, is that because he projects a certain masculine confidence all the time that we just assume that, well... Okay, sorry. So
every time it's going to be, this is the last time.
This is the last time, I promise. Okay. So he walks handsomely down the stairs to he walks down and the man is kind of stalking around. She hears a little scuffle happening with the husband. There's shit going on in the other room, and she goes down and suddenly the man is in the same room with her behind her, right? This guy with this clear creepy mask kind of advancing on her, and she's terrified. They have a little scuffle. Am I wrong that she knocks him with a lamp? No. She the man comes and like starts joking her, and then suddenly from behind the man, bam, Ted hits the guy on the head with his golf club, and he collapses. And Ted's got a big, you know, scar on his cheek. He clearly had something in the other room with the man. And she's freaking out, Bria Grant's character, with this guy now laying on the floor with like kind of blood pouring out of his head. She doesn't know what's going on. She's in a state of shock and panic. And Ted just kind of says with a bit of like a hurt whimper in his voice, you didn't even come check on me in the other room. But very casually. And then takes him in his arms and starts walking away. And she's like, what, shouldn't we like make, you know, do something like with the guy laying there? Shouldn't we call it something? And Dad's like, no, I'm sure he's already gone, which you saw in the trailer. They turn around and of course the man is no longer there, but there's just sort of blood laying on the wooden floor. So they call a little bit later, the cops are over and they're investigating the scene and they're asking Ted what happened. And he's recounting, yeah, this man showed up. And the cops ask, like, so, and you've never seen him before. And Ted kind of shares a little look with his wife and says, no, this is the first time we've ever seen him. And kind of looks knowingly over at his wife. And she's kind of like, what's going on? She's just kind of freaking out. Why is my husband looking at me like we're sharing some kind of inside joke? So it's all very creepy to her. And the cops say a phrase that will be said throughout in this movie to her, which says, you know, you're very lucky. You're very, very lucky that nothing, this man could have caused a lot more damage. She's going to keep hearing this, particularly from all the men that she encounters in this movie. If it's not clear yet, this movie, I don't know if this spoils it. It's a very interesting, and I thought kind of deep feminist allegory about being a woman in the world.
I'm already like, I don't know where this is going, but I'm already like, I'm pissed off. These motherfuckers. I'm ready to hear.
I will say
rest.
If you are listening to this and you want to watch, I would say pause it and watch it now, because that's a good setup for you. And if you are interested, also, it's been fun to like see the reactions online, particularly again the difference between how women watching the movie have reacted and how men have. And I saw a really fun tweet that I was like that from a woman saying, I would love if all men stop what they're doing, watch Lucky right now, and wrote a 3-to-5-page response. Thank you. that's pretty great. Okay, yeah. So what do we go to the next morning then, Sammy? Am I missing something?
Yeah, they kind of say like, we'll have the local guys keep an eye out. And yeah, next morning they have breakfast or coffee.
They have some breakfast, and now she confronts him, you know. She's like, wait, honey, I don't know if I imagined it or something was up, because I was in such a state of shock and panic, but you said something really weird last night. She asked her husband, right? Which we saw this part in the trailer too. And he says, he's like, what are you talking about? And she says, you know, you said that there was a man who comes, and he finishes a sentence. Yeah. Every night, and tries to kill us. She's like, what are you talking about? She's like, what, honey? That's the man shows up every night. Like, that's just how it is. This is what happens. Now, in this scene is where I had a little bit of an acting critique for myself, but that's fine. Where I thought it would be more interesting. Should I say this? I guess I'll give it to you in the behind the scenes part. Right. So she's just like flummoxed. She's like, what is going on? And he starts getting more and more frustrated with her. Like, this is what happens. A man comes, we run for our lives, we try to, you know, he attacks us every night. Why are you acting so fucking weird? Like, he starts getting mad.
For him, she's being crazy because she should already know this.
Yeah, she should know this. And she's also, he's upset with her for getting emotional about this. You know, there's kind of a bit of a gaslighting thing of like, what the fuck? How can you get upset? This is just what happens. This is the way life is. Like, deal with this. And she's getting more and more frustrated. And and clearly this is a breaking point for him, because this has seemingly happened before in some way. And he's like, you know what? I don't want to get into this again. I'm not having another fight with you. And we get a hint that they've had, there's something in their history a little worse than the surface of this fight. And as their tensions mount, he's like, I'm fucking leaving. I'm going somewhere for a while until you calm down. I'll come back in a couple of days or something like that. Mm-hmm. She's like, well, you can't leave me alone. What if the man comes back? And he looks at her like she's fucking crazy. And he says, it's the middle of the day, May. Fuck it. Like, the man doesn't fucking do that. And leaves. And gets in his car and goes to his like family's place. At this point, she's freaking out because now she's left alone at home. There's this strange mystery of a man who seemingly comes every night, or does he? What's happening here? And so she's trying to get in touch with Ted, and it's like, please come back. I don't know what I don't want us to fight, but he's just like, he texts her back saying like, I'm sorry, but I can't be with you when you're like this.
Whoa. You're acting so irrationally. Like it's illogical for you to react in this emotional way. I love this because obviously gaslighting happens all the time in horror movies, but I've never seen it done like this before. So this is very surprising.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. It's so tempting to say stuff about behind the scenes or like stuff I know from Bria, from, you know, the way things that inspired this, but I won't. I'll save that for after.
Okay.
I'll stick to the story. But just in response to what you just said, I want to say it's fine. Okay, so
we'll get there.
So she goes to, she's left by herself, and she goes to a hardware store, buys a hammer. She calls Ted's sister, Sarah, and asks, "Have you heard from him?" And she hasn't, right, at this point.
No. Ted's sister Sarah, played by the very, honestly, hilarious, but this was a choice on the director's part to cast a lot of like comedy people in it because of what a strange kind of satirical movie this is. Sort of. So Qasr Muhammad, who was also a UCB performer and is great, plays my sister in the movie. Yeah, calls her. She hasn't heard from her either, right? And then
I think Sarah says, like, do you want to stay here? And she says, no, that's fine. Like, and she's thinking Ted's probably going to come home that night. He doesn't. So she's home alone that night. I think Edie comes by to help her fix the window that was smashed. That's and right. Edie also says, do you want me to stay here with
yeah,
you?
Yeah, Edie's her assistant.
Oh, sorry. Yes.
Oh, okay. No, I was going to say, who's Edie? Okay.
Yeah, Edie's assistant. I forgot to mention, she was at the beginning of the movie as well with her book tours and stuff. So she's her assistant. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Got sorry. It. Go ahead, Sammy. Yeah.
And so May, Bria's character, is basically like, no, like, I'm not going to be scared out of my house. Like, it's going to be fine. I'm going to stay here. But you can see that she's like kind of gearing up, but she's scared in case he comes again. And she has been told he comes every night. And then that night I can't remember if she falls asleep or not. She's calling Ted, leaving voicemails, and she hears a noise in the house at nighttime, and it's that man again. And think she is downstairs. He comes through a doorway. She's got the golf club in hand, and she hits him in the legs, so he kind of hunches over in pain, curls over in pain, and then she hits him on the head with the golf club. He collapses on the ground. She kind of checks to see if he is dead or unconscious. His eyes open back up. She runs from him. She runs upstairs. He chases her up the stairs. And at the top of the stairs, she turns and pushes him. So he falls down the stairs and hits his head pretty hard. And you can see like a pool of blood coming from by his head. And she goes to grab the phone to call the police again. And you hear her frantically on the phone like, there's a man. The man is back at my house. And as she is placing this call, she then goes to look at him, and he's gone again.
So what is his vibe? Like, this man, I'm guessing he doesn't speak.
He's chill. He's like a chill stoner, bro. You know,
like, is surfer. He like cool? Like,
is he single or?
What do we think he likes to eat for dinner? Where can I take him? No, is he like, does he like actively like, is he slow? Like, I'm just sort of like, is he like a Mike
he's,
Myers?
I'd say
sort of
he's more of a Michael
slowly?
Myers vibe. Yeah. He's okay. Slow. And I feel like he's in a Michael Myers adjacent outfit, a kind of almost like a utility suit. Mm-hmm. Seems that way. It's kind of dark, so I can't totally tell, but
he's kind of a suit thing, little piece of costume design, or this was from the hair and makeup department. His hair is similar to Ted's, like what we can see above it. They're styled in the same. Mm-hmm. You know, he's got like, he's like a similarly built man, just like a, Mike Myers, I think, is a good comparison point. I think he's like a kind of a facsimile.
Slow but determined.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Exactly.
Okay.
And calm and collected, slow and determined.
Yeah.
Do the police like have records of them calling every night to be like, a man's coming to kill? Or do the police like forget about this too? Or what's the police
now we've got
reaction?
So the cops come back again, and now we get a detective kind of that sits with her, a man. And they do remember that they were there last night, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep, they do. And they say, don't worry, we'll have like, or again, they say like, look, you're lucky. It could have been a lot worse. This man could have done a lot. You know, you're very lucky. They keep telling her that. And then they say, look, we'll have another patrol car kind of parked outside and keep a watch there to make sure this doesn't happen. And she's obviously starting to get more frustrated. And now the detective also, this is the point I think where he asks about her husband, because mm-hmm. he's like, so your husband and you fight. Like, he thinks he sees kind of that broken shard, you know, on the table. And he's like, something else is going on here with you and your husband. If they're like, what are these fights like when you fight with your husband? Is something going on? And she's like, no, she's like, there's a fucking man trying to kill me. Just like, focus on that. And he won't focus on it. He's still asking about her husband.
And then, so they kind of just don't help really at all. And then the next morning, She goes to Sarah's.
Yes, the Ted's sister's place.
And I think all that happens in this scene with Sarah's is that there's kind of an allusion to something happening. She's like, I don't know what I did that Ted is so mad at me for. And Sarah says, is this like last time? And she says, no, this is different. Last time was my fault. This is just a thing that happened. There's just a man trying to kill us.
So there's more tension in this marriage than we have been led on.
Yes, exactly. At the beginning. Exactly. Yeah, there's something else historically happening.
And so then we go to the book signing.
Yes, so she's at a book signing now doing a Q&A, and you can tell she's super distracted. Like, she's, you know, she's an author clearly who has a predominantly female audience, you know, for herself up, and they're asking her questions about, like, being a woman in the workplace, being you know, how all these things that she's clearly an authority on in her books, and she has no confidence in answering them. Her mind is obviously elsewhere because she's being attacked every night by this strange man. And she doesn't really know how to answer them. And then someone in the audience, played by Carmen Angelica, asks her a question about...
She says, you say in your book about how women bond over their failures, I think. And she's like, and you're right, I do that. But do you think men and women are, like, differently react to... Is it fear or certain thing? What is it? The differently react to something.
Yes. It's very much in that vein. I think, yeah, differently react to fear or something. And as she's contemplating that question, you can tell that an idea is forming in May's mind, where she starts to go, like, there's something about that question, something about, like, why am I responding differently to this fear as a woman, as opposed to the way Ted, for example, just bounced, right? So something's forming, and a plan of attack is seemingly forming in her head, right? So after that, she goes
back to the hardware store, I think, again, and gets some rope and some mace. And now she's like making coffee. She's going to stay up and face this man.
And then sure enough, a little bit later, the man shows up.
And she uses the mace. She, I think, stabs him in the back and at the foot of the bed, if I'm remembering correctly. And he falls like out of her view of sight. She goes and grabs the phone to call the cops again. And at the foot of the bed, he is again gone.
Yeah, that's right. She stabs his like Achilles tendon, and knocks him out right. Yeah.
So does she see him disappear, or it's more like she turns away and then she turns back and he's gone?
Right.
Yeah.
And does he like have a weapon with him, or is he like trying to kill her in a specific way? Or
there's a line the first time where Ted says, "I hope he doesn't have any good weapons tonight." Like he
uses like something different every time.
I feel like he has a knife frequently, but. Does he use other weapons?
Doesn't he have like some kind of hammer or something at some point?
Yeah, maybe a hammer. Wrong? Yeah, he can come with some weapons.
Dealer's choice.
Yeah. Got it. It's a game for him. You know, he's just got like a different thing. He's there to attack.
I'll try this tonight. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Exactly. So he's gone again, and once again, May has to confront these detectives. Now there's a different detective as well.
Mm-hmm. Something that the detective says, because she's getting mad because they're giving her the same treatment of kind of not really being any help at all, and he says being angry is not going to help. Like, why you should just like stay calm, you need to just like relax.
Wait, is the second detective a woman or a man?
This is the man that's saying this part.
Okay,
but yeah, the second one is a woman. Next day, again at the store, she's getting a security system with Sarah, and Sarah has one of those moments also where she kind of almost not a trance, but she kind of says something like she's thinking it's her self-talk. Like she's talking normally and then all of a sudden she kind of says something a little differently. And she says, yeah, that like these things are tough. That's just the way it goes, or something they say a lot is like, yeah, that's just the way things are.
That's just life. That's how it is, right? And again, she invites May to like stay at her place. She's like, "Are you sure you just don't want to, you know, come over to mine. That way we can, you can be there. And May's just like, no, I got to take care of this. She's like determined after that book signing. And she, so she goes to install the security system and goes home and puts it in, sets a code, you know, like gets it all set up. So she's ready to go when this man shows up. And she's got all her like weapons now from Home Depot. She's like ready for this shit. Right. So she wait again, she like has some coffee and waits, right? She sits down and waits for the
well,
man.
Well, he comes during the day this time.
Everyone said that wouldn't happen.
They said it wouldn't happen.
Because that security system isn't, you know, armed yet. So he just comes right in the daytime. But he's kind of standing downstairs and doesn't see her. And so she fully is able to like sneak up right behind him and stab him. And she kills him instantly without even any fight. And again, calls the cops. Again, he disappears. And then the next day he comes during the day again. So we're getting this. It's like happening faster now that we're having these.
Like less time passes between his appearances.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah. It seems that way. And yeah, he comes in the day again the next day.
Yeah, and he's like getting more efficient, right? He's got like another knife or whatever with him. And at one point she stabs him in his neck, mm-hmm. and blood's like falling mm-hmm. all over her. Oh God, it's so fucking cool.
Yeah, that's this one. He's on top of her. They've been like fighting and tumbling around, and he's doing the thing where he's trying to stab her, and she's holding his hand off and is able to flip the knife around and stab him in the throat, but his throat is right above her face, so all the blood just like goes onto her face. And yeah, she's able to roll out from under him, call the cops. She's covered in blood. She's got like her duct tape in her hand. She's like wiping blood off of her face, and he disappears again.
And has she gotten any serious injuries in any of these occurrences?
She's getting in one of them she gets
sort of like banged
she's
up.
She's getting
but
banged
not.
Up.
Bruised.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
yeah,
she's
okay.
This house is beautiful, by the way. I really liked this house. It has, I mean, we talk a lot about how spooky window walls are. But they're really
window walls are the scariest kind of
really
walls.
Scary at nighttime, mm-hmm. but really beautiful in the day.
Or you know what? You know, it's also a scary kind of wall. Windowless wall. There's the right amount of windows to have and any more, any less scary. Mm-hmm.
That's a good point. Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's never a movie where there's a big window wall house that turns out good, you know, like Parasite, big window walls.
Big window walls.
What is it? Ex Machina. I'm thinking of all those like big window wall houses. Mm-hmm. Shit's bad. Shit's
too
bad.
Much glass.
You don't want that.
Not good.
It's not good.
So if I'm not mistaken, then again, she's like, she like confirms with the police. She's like, look, I need you guys to fucking come immediately when I do this. Just like be waiting and do this because this man keeps coming back, right? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And they're like, all right, fine or whatever. And again, they're still asking her. They're like, okay, but were there any like verbal threats? She's like, no, this man's wearing a fucking mask and is silent. Like they're still trying to kind of get more out of her than mm-hmm. necessary. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Okay, but is it really that serious? Like, has he directly said he's going to come back? You know, mm-hmm. They still don't quite believe this is a code red emergency.
Okay.
So she like, you know, battens down the place. And then I believe the next day she's like, she's hammering the cabinet. She got a hammer and the door, there's someone at the door. And so she goes and answers the door with a hammer on, but it's her book agent. Her her agent is like, hey, I'm sorry. We saw this in the trailer a little bit, and the guy's like, is this a bad time? And she's like, it's fine. She's just holding a hammer. So he gives her a box of all like her books that were still, you know, still unsold or whatever. She's like, I got these, and you know what? We got a new advance. And he starts to say these things that agents in different capacities say sometimes, especially literary agents, where he's like, we got an advance on a new book. They do have a few notes, you know, with the women's movement being what it is. We'd love if you threw in some buzzwords. And then he says, he's like, you know, like Latinx. And just get the shit that notes that if you've ever gotten studio notes, this is pretty real. If you ever like that, this is pretty real.
We get it. We just want to make sure you get it. And exactly. It's this kind of stuff.
Exactly. So he wants like a little like, you know, hashtag me too. Like make it feel like it's like contemporary about it, and then we'll publish it or whatever. Mm-hmm. And she's just obviously like, this is not my fucking focus right now. She's you know, she's dealing with the life and death thing. And then again he says, like, by the way, you are so lucky that they want to do another one. And she's like, what? He's like, you're so lucky that they want to work with you. And then finally something snaps in her, and she's like, no, I'm not lucky. I worked my fucking ass off on that book, and like I worked my ass off all the time, and I did these tours, and I, you know what I mean? I did all the shit for free, and I wrote, and I fucking, I'm not lucky. I just work really, really, really fucking hard. And he's like, kind of silent. It's just like, yeah, that's what I meant. All right, well, congrats. And, kind of, and he kind of splits. But you could tell something is changing in her. She's like, she doesn't like hearing that anymore, understandably.
That night, man returns, if you can believe it.
At this point, I can.
Just like we've seen her character change a little bit in the last scene, this time she's like, fuck you, you fucking asshole. Like, she starts like, you know, she starts taunting them. She's going at a director. She's like, what the fuck do you want? What do you want from me? I'm not even scared of you. You know, I don't give a shit. And he obviously doesn't answer. He's just kind of being casual and creepy.
She's being the man.
Creepy cash.
I mean, she's killed him so many times at this point. It is extremely impressive. I mean, like, she wins every time.
Yeah.
Except he's obviously some kind of creepy ghost back. Or something. Yeah. So I don't know what the deal is there.
Something's happening. Something else is going on with her.
Okay.
And then somehow he holds up his hand and he's got her knife.
And she's like, all right, let's do this. And like grabs her hammer.
And she like uses it to like stab him in the back. Blood spurts and stuff. And he kind of falls to the floor. And she like grabs the rope, binds his hands together. Ties his
okay,
legs together.
Hell yeah.
And she's about to, she goes closer to her face and she's about to pull this creepy kind of distorted mask off his face when there's a knock and the cops are like, oh, police are here. You know, there was an alarm or whatever. And they storm into the living room. And this time she says to the man, you're lucky. And as she turns away, though, again, the man is.
He disappears.
She had him tied up and everything.
Fuck, you gotta take a pic. Pics or it didn't happen.
okay.
Then there's a scene with the social worker. And I think it's kind of the same thing where she's talking to a person that's supposed to be kind of there to help her and somewhat of an authority figure that's just like not helpful at all. And kind of, if anything, trying to make her feel bad or crazy. And I feel like that's the scene is, it's like, oh, another person that's not helping me with this problem and not really taking me seriously.
Yes, exactly. And then again, the social worker's asking her about her husband, and it's like, so what's up with Ted? You know, like going off in the stand, and she's not interested in gaslighting her.
Mm-hmm.
And then she asks her, if I'm not mistaken, says like, so with your husband, with these fights you're talking about, has he ever been like very angry with you and acted in a way that wasn't appropriate? Because she's trying to figure out like, what does this man have to do with the husband, right? And May takes a second and then has to say, yeah, he has. And the social worker's like, what do you mean? And then May explains, like, well, a year ago, she cheated on Ted. She was on a book tour, and she thought their relationship was over and stuff, and she ended up cheating on him, and she eventually confessed it to him, and he was very, very angry. And the social worker's like, okay, and did he hit you? And she says, no, he just, like, he was just very angry, so I'm trying to tell you that. And again, the social worker's like, yeah, but was he physically violent with you? And she says, no, he was sad and upset. And, you know, I feel regret about this thing. I ruined our marriage, but that's all that happened. And the social worker's still like, well, have you heard from him since this has started? You know, are you sure you're fine now? And again, May just keeps saying, like, I feel like you're just not hearing me. That's not the issue. I'm trying to deal with this other thing. It's nothing to do with it. She's like, I hurt my husband. I'm not in danger from him. I'm in danger from this other man. And May just kind of has to give up. She's like, no one can hear exactly what I'm trying to bring to the issue.
Mm-hmm. Does the social worker tell her to stay at Sarah's?
Yeah. She decides to go to Sarah's. Yes. Yeah. And again, if you're listening to this, I promise if you watch the movie, it'll be more entertaining than listening to me try to think of exactly what happened in the scene. So please watch it.
Please watch it.
Yes. Okay.
Drew, are you ruining this retelling so people will watch your movie?
A sneaky, sneaky play.
Sneaky, sneaky.
Sneaky ploy. Okay, so she goes to Sarah's, Ted's sister, and Ted, you know, fucking exhausted. Like, May at this point is just like obviously she's had it up to here. She's like ragging. No one will listen to her. People are just gaslighting her left, right, and center. The whole vibe of it is, you know, obviously she's being stalked every night. So she goes to Sarah's and, you know, they sit down and have some white wine, I think, or you know, at her kitchen table. And Sarah's just like, you look so tired. Like, what's up? And May's like, no, but I need to stay vigilant. And Sarah's like, don't worry, you're safe here. You know, you're somewhere else. It's going to be fine. She's just, May's trying to communicate, like, this man is just being back every night. I don't know what I'm doing. And Sarah again is like, look, these things are just, you know, they're really horrible. And May's like, well, what do you think is, I mean, am I being punished for something that I did? And all Sarah seems to repeat is like, yeah, this is so scary. This is really horrible. And May's like, I've said that. I've said all of, like, I feel like I'm having this conversation again. Like, you are the sleep cove man. Is that what he is? Mm-hmm. That's what it sounds like to her.
He's the sleep cove man.
Sleep cove man. She's like, are you even fucking listening to me, right? And then when she leans forward, Sarah leans forward and accidentally knocks the wine, like her glass of wine. She says, oops, and goes up, bends to get it. And when she bends over, you know, she's wearing a, what do they call it, like spaghetti straps? What, like a halter,
yeah,
you know,
yeah,
top.
Like a loose back top.
Okay.
Yes. And when she bends over to get the wine, May notices there's a huge scar down Sarah's back.
Mm-hmm.
And May has to ask, she's like, what is that? What's that scar? And Sarah says, and God, I love Koster's performance in this scene especially. Sarah just kind of looks at her and says, just an old thing. Just part of living in this world. Like she just doesn't, and then quickly changes the topic. Like, so is there any reason this man might be targeting you? It's so unclear what's going on.
Just an old
May.
Thing. Ugh. Freaky.
Ooh, so creepy.
You gotta watch Koster say, because it's such a beautifully creepy performance.
She just gets her settled in the room. She's staying in their house. She starts unpacking her stuff. She's like Googling problem solving for staying alive, I think is what she Googles.
That's right. And Sarah's little kid Cooper is in the house as well, who's like a 7-8-year-old boy or something like that.
All kids are 8.
All kids are 8.
Yeah, we've established that on this podcast.
Yeah, that makes sense actually to me. Yeah. She's googling like these, like it's so funny to do that, to Google like problem solving for staying alive, you know, and like a man in mask attacking me.
Like it though, because I've googled such crazy shit. Like I've
totally.
You do Google just weird random shit like that.
Absolutely. I feel like if I was in this situation, I would be like, what to do if man in mask attacks.
How to kill the man that tries to kill you every night.
Yeah. And she hears a crash somewhere in the house, like a window breaking. This is in Sarah's house. And she jumps up and she grabs her hammer that she's got with her, and she runs into the room and she sees just like slathered in blood. Sarah is laying down there, just covered in a pool of her own blood. Her face, like, bloody. She's just been... And May just starts to, like, hyperventilate because she's like, fuck, the man is here. And, of course, she looks up and standing there near the bed is the man. So May just, you know, turns around and dashes out, exits. The man chases. She's screaming. She looks down the hall and she sees Cooper, the little... 8-year-old kid, eternally 8-year-old kid, is standing there. And she's like, Cooper, go to your bedroom and lock the fucking door. And he just stares. She's like, now go to your fucking room. And like, and she didn't say fucking, but she's like, go to your room, go fast and lock the door, call the police. Cooper runs off, luckily, listens to her. The door flies open and the man chases after her again. She grabs the hammer. She runs out into the backyard and the man beats her to it and like hits her into her with all of his weight, like throws her into the wall. She like smashes the hammer into his head, I think, and passes out. Both of them are like now laying in a pool of their own blood. The man, you know, both the man and her.
Mm-hmm. So this is the worst that she's gotten hurt by him.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Okay. They both hurt the shit out of each other. And they're both like their blood kind of crawling towards each other. We see a beautiful like overhead shot. And it's a very, very... Natasha is such a stylish director. I really love it. And this is one of those scenes where for like a 20-second slow fade to black, we just like kind of... as their blood mingles together, we just kind of, mm-hmm. this is really strange. So, and we're not sure again what's real and what's not as this is happening, like something's happening. She passes that, right? And when she comes to, there's a person above her. She comes to with her vision blurry of a person looking at her, and she jumps up, obviously. And the man's like, no, don't worry. I'm here to help you. It's clearly like a medic in a medic outfit. He's like, you're safe. You're fine. And she's like, where's Sarah? Where's Cooper? And the medic says, Cooper, the kid, he called the police. Like he said, you told him to. It's totally fine. I examined him myself. He's not hurt at all. It's all going to be fine. And she looks over to where the man was. And again, it's just a puddle of blood. And the man is, of course, bounced. He's gone.
They say that Sarah has been rushed to the hospital. She says, I need to go there. And the paramedic is like, no, like I really need to check your vitals. I need to give you a sedative. That'll help you heal. You're pretty badly hurt. She says, I don't want a sedative. I want to go see Sarah and make sure she's okay. And she starts kind of trying to, I think, like push her way through the house. Now we have the two detectives there. I think the social worker, the paramedic, and they are all kind of like crowding around her and each asking her questions, like getting really in her face. It's like really overwhelming. They're like, mm-hmm. The writing in this scene is so great because their sentences start to blend together, like they're picking up each other's. I can't remember an example.
Yeah, that's exactly it. And again, she's just like, we've been over all of this shit. Like how I've been trying to tell you this, and it's just more questions. I have some more questions. Da, 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 da. And then at some point, I think right before what you were just saying, the crescendo of where their voices go, she says something like, how long have I been doing this? She's like asking the officer, how long has this been going on? And the officer says, what do you mean? She's like fighting the man. Every like, how long have we been doing that? And the officer's kind of casual. He's like, oh, I don't know. I assume since the parking garage. And she's like, what parking garage? And he's like, well, when you dropped your books and you couldn't find your keys, that's when. She's like, what are you talking about? And then they start to all ask questions at the same time. Mm-hmm. And a little bit, we saw a little glimpse of in the trailer, the medic is like, well, that sure is scary. And the other detective was like, very, you know, they're very like kind of chipper about how scary it is. They're all asking these questions, their voices blend together. And then in a very strange moment, it seems like they're all singing at her almost, like their voices blend and the tone starts to get switched up, like almost auto-tune, and they're like, oh, they're kind of singing it. It's all overwhelming her, fucking like she doesn't know if she's going insane or this is actually happening, and, you know, runs out of the place. And then she runs into a car. She like puts her keys in. And as she does it, it's daytime. Suddenly it switches to night and she's in the parking garage. Like at night, something has happened here.
Oh, scary.
So she's kind of freaking out. And she's like, what the fuck is happening? She like looks at herself in the rearview mirror and like just looks hellish. You know, she's gone through so much shit. She, through her car window, she kind of sees them. Oh, she gets out of the car.
Yeah, she gets out of the car and then she sees, or she hears maybe a scream, looks in one direction, and it's a different man. It's not her man. It's a long-haired man now, and she sees...
Also in a mask.
With a
slightly different mask.
With, yes. with a meat hook or something.
No.
Is his weapon.
I hate that.
It's a bad one. And then we see Edie, her assistant, running at the man and attacking him and trying to kill him. I think they knock him down. She knocks him down. And then May runs up and grabs Edie to help Edie. And is like, come here. And they like hide behind a car. He gets back up. May has like a box cutter or some sort of little knife, a little switchblade.
I think she grabbed like a scalpel from the medic's thing. Running out of there. She grabbed a scalpel, yeah.
And this man walks by and they're huddled behind the car. And as he steps forward, again, they slice that Achilles heel.
Ooh.
And he falls and Edie's able to get the meat hook from him and grabs it and stabs him with that meat hook.
And they have a little conversation where it seems like they're both going through something similar here. They're like, wait, so you have a man too, girl? Damn, that's not how they say it. Like they both have a man, you know what I mean? And they both, so they're both trying to, they both seem, Edie seems like kind of more casual about it at this point. She's like, yeah, this is what we deal with. And as they walk around, they go, you know, they start hightailing it in the parking garage, and they see another woman with another man also fending off her man. They turn around, it's like this 360 shot, and they see another woman with a different man. Turn around, it's another woman with a different man. It's all these crazy colors and shit going on.
Ooh, something's I have
up.
Chills. I got chills on my scalp.
Oh my God. Yeah, this is...
this scene is, yeah, really... it's very visually cool, right? Because it's got the lighting in it is...
Yeah.
It's all these reds and blues.
Shout out to Julia Swain, who's the director of photography on this, who fucking kills it, and Natasha for like her vision with this shit. Like it's so surreal, but also I feel like you feel the meaning of it because of it. You feel kind of the import of it. It's just like we keep swiveling a whole 360 degrees, and it's just different women dealing with their different man.
Wow.
It's fucking them all up. And then
Edie's like, we have to help them. We have to help them. And May is kind of like, help all of them? Like, we can't help all of them. Like, how are we going to do that? And Edie's like, well, just like you helped me. And May says, I helped you because I know you. You're my friend. Like, I can't even help myself. I can't help all of these women. We just got to get out of here. We got to basically like worry about ourselves. And I think as they're like running out, we hear something and May turns around and Edie is having her throat slit by
her man,
by May's
no.
man,
by May's man.
No,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm,
no.
So May screams, runs, and of course, there's another woman being attacked by another man, right? But May can't help, and she feels this guilt, but she can't help them all. Like all these, and it's women we've seen before in the movie, you know, who are now reappearing and fighting off their man. So she runs out to her car, jumps into her car to speed off, and the man shows up, and she runs him over. Her man, May's man, she runs him over with her car, continues to drive, and is fucking freaking out the whole time. She's trying to call Ted, gets his voicemail again. And then as she's driving off, freaking out, it's just Ted's voicemail. She glances up in her rearview mirror and Ted is in her backseat. She sees Ted's face there in her backseat. Now, obviously, as viewers, we are distracted because the facial proportions on this guy. So she like swerves off and pulls over and is like, what the? And Ted is just very casually like, hi, May. And she's like, Ted, you fucking scared me. What the fuck? And Ted is like, you think you'd be used to that by now. She's like, what the fuck were you doing back there? And Ted's like, well, the police called, so I came as quickly as I could. And she's like, to the back of my car? And Ted's like, yeah. Again, acting so kind of normal, like this is all normal, and she's the weird one, right? Mm-hmm. And she's like, get out of my car, Ted, get the fuck out. And he's like, why? And she's like, get out. And he won't get out. So she says, fine. She gets out. Ted emerges from the car also. And she's very on edge with him. She's like, don't get any closer to me. She doesn't know what is going on with this husband of hers, right? And he's just like, I was waiting for you. And as she looks at him, she realizes he's got like blood on his hands. She's like, why is there blood on your hands? And Ted's like, what? No, I helped a woman back there. You know, the parking garage is dangerous and shit. And she's just like, kind of stay away from me, Ted. And he says a line that this is, I think, credit to Bria's great writing. He says like, I'm your husband, May. What could I ever do to hurt you? Which is, of course, the most likely person to hurt anyone. And again, he's telling her, he's like, she's like, I didn't just stay back. And he's again like, you're being so fucking ridiculous, May. Like, you're being so crazy right now. What are you doing? And as they walk out, he's like, why don't we just go inside? And she's like, what do you mean go inside? And then looks around and they're in the front of their house. And she's like, I didn't drive here. I didn't, how am I here? And Ted's just kind of, you know, yeah, sometimes you end up where you got to be, right? And so she's like, why are you here? They're in this real moment of now dealing with their shit. And he's like, well, you remember we were fighting, right? You got like, when you got really like mean to me and I was just trying to come up with solutions and be rational and you were acting all crazy. And she's like, what are you talking about? I wasn't. And he says, well, I said I'd come back when you calmed down. So I came back. And so she, you know, she puts it all out there. She's like, look, I thought I was being punished, you know, for cheating on you when I did. And then I realized like all these other women are also being attacked. They can't all be getting punished, right? They're all is, I don't get it. I guess we're just all here to survive in some way. And then she says like, the police, by the way, thought that it was you. They thought the man was you. And he says, well, how could it be me? I was there, right? I fought him. You saw me do that. And he's like, well, you thought it was me? And she's like, I don't know. And then Ted says, well, doesn't really matter. It doesn't really matter how to who the man is or how you fight him, right? The man is just the point is you just got to deal with what's happening. This is what it is. And she says, "All right, well, I'm going inside." And Ted says, "Like, you know, we're not safe there, right?" She's like, "Yeah, I know." And they kind of put their he takes her hand and they walk up to that. There's some kind of strange like peace between them from this conversation they've had. And so they walk up towards the house. They're standing in front of the house now, in front of the big creepy wall window. and Ted says, like, well, we just got to get through this together, you know, maybe things will be normal again. And it's this very emotional moment, and he kind of like, you know, hugs her and puts her, you know, I'm trying to remember what I actually did on the day, but puts her little hair behind her ear, maybe, you know, a little gesture, and says, like, these past few days have been really hard for you, huh? And now all, like, tears start to flow down her face. It's like this cathartic, all this tension of several days is kind of pouring out of her. And she's like, I really want to give up, but I know we just got to keep going. And Ted is like, look, I'm here. You don't have to go it alone. And squeezes her and hugs her tightly. And she's just like, man, everything's so fucking weird. And as he's squeezing her, she hears him like gasp like in her arms, and feels like pulls her hand and feels like a wetness on her back, and then feels around and there's a knife protruding out of Ted's back. And he looks at her, not really focusing her, and like crumples to the ground with a knife stuck in his back, and of course revealing the man standing behind her.
This fucking man.
Man has killed Ted. And so she dashes away from this like good-looking corpse laying on the floor.
Oh, no.
And turns around for one last look.
She's like, one more kiss, Ted. One more kiss. Just kiss.
I don't care that you're dead. Just, you're too handsome.
Too sexy, Ted. Sorry. Okay. So she runs into the house. The fucking man is chasing, you know, her. Of course, she's screaming at him at this point because he's like, "What did you do to Ted?"
She's like, "No, no, no. Like, not this time." Goes inside. Locks the doors. He's like running around trying to lock each of the doors, goes back to the big glass walls, window walls, and the man shows that he has just like a ring of so many keys. And she says, that's not fair. Like, and she says, like, I fucking hate you. And he, I think, uses the keys to come in. He's pursuing her. They're down on the first floor, and so she's like walking towards. She grabs that shard of glass from the beginning that they had said that could be pretty dangerous, and turns. And as he's coming for her, kind of stabs him in the neck with it, and it's this very cool like slow mo shot where the camera like falls with them, and they both like collapse on the ground, him seemingly dead again, but they've fallen facing each other, and they're just kind of, she's looking at him.
She reaches over and she like pulls off the mask finally, and we see the man's face, but it's a shifting, moving face where it's Ted, and then it's the officer, and then it's just like it's all the men in the movie, kind of just slowly,
oh my going god, from of
morphing
course.
Over Fuck. His face from person to person, and it cuts to black, and that's the
that's
movie.
That's the end of the movie.
Yeah.
That's the end of the movie.
Yeah.
Oh my god!
Wow. The music is so good in that scene too.
The score is great. Yeah, Jeremy, who did the score, is a freaking genius. He's so good. The score is great. Score will be out on vinyl next week,
ooh.
I believe, for like soundtrack enthusiasts.
Ooh.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow.
So yeah, that's lucky. Please, I hope people who haven't seen it didn't listen to this all. Like, listen to part of it and then watched it. But please watch it if you haven't already, because mm-hmm. it's really
wow.
good.
It's really good.
And also describing it won't do justice. Like, Natasha's direction is so stylish and cool, and the moods of it and the shift, you know, like the repetitiveness of that thing is actually plays really well cinematically, because you feel her frustration with it mm-hmm. so much because of how it's working out. Yeah, I really highly recommend
yeah,
it for people
too.
Even if I wasn't
wow.
in it, I would recommend it.
You can, we can watch movies that Drew's not in. Some of those are good. But this one also good. Okay, I can't wait to hear the behind-the-scenes stuff and your acting note. But also, I just listening to it, and I'm sure watching it too, Sammy, it feels like by the end you have to get to seeing her like win or like find a way, and that's like she doesn't, like she just sees what it is, but it's like it's not, we don't think at the end of the movie that it's not going to happen again.
Right. So that's what I was thinking about too, where one of the things that makes horror movies so scary is when the problem is inescapable. And this is like the perfect problem that is inescapable. Obviously, it's an allegory for the patriarchy, which we are all living in constantly. And it is not, hopefully not that bad and Kafkaesque, but nonetheless, it is like everywhere and inescapable, and there's no end to it that you can really see, and it's wow,
and no one face, like no one enemy, it's like hey, guess what, it's every man in your life,
right?
And even the women, to a certain extent, I guess that's probably what was happening with Sarah, where it's like internalized misogyny or internalized just like normalization of living in this society that the shitty things happen to women, like
Like, just deal with it. That's, like, part of what we do. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Man. It is. It really did make me think a lot. I mean, even from doing it, where I was like, it's... Also, so this is a little behind-the-scenes-y kind of thing. And I think it's okay for me to talk about it because Bria told us, obviously, on set, but also she, when we were on a panel, she kind of mentioned this. But a lot of the inspiration for her in writing it was from a personal experience she had with a stalker and reporting that there was this person, this man stalking her, and the way it was treated by the cops and people she reported it to is almost beat for beat what happens to me in this movie, where it's like, how much more evidence or whatever do you need? You know, it was like this constant series of things. So I think that's why the fact that there was no clean resolution in this movie is because in real life, she had no clean resolution from that. So I think it comes from that.
And there's always like the implication that like you've done something to provoke him, or like what have you done to like get to lead him to acting in this way, or what's
is
your
it really as bad as you say, or are you being dramatic, or sure, maybe it's happening, but it's probably not that you think it's a big deal, but it's probably not really that big of a deal.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, there's like so many words and phrases in the movie that like every woman has heard so many times of just like, calm down, like you're being crazy. And like those kind of
like there's a right way to react to this and a wrong way. Right. And the way you're reacting is the wrong way.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
This is what a good movie.
Yeah.
It really is. Mm. I don't know. I feel like it's such a, what I love about what Bria did with it. And I think it's using hard genre filmmaking to do, because I feel like watching a movie about a topic like that it's almost like sugar pills, you know, like you, it's easier to digest it for people. Like for me as a cis straight man walking around the world, I feel like this makes it inescapable to kind of feel her worldview and feel like empathy with it. Whereas if you watch a documentary about it or something, it's like it comes at you in a different way. Here it's like I'm being sucked into it. I don't know. I think they did
being put in those shoes, put in that place. Yeah,
very good thesis for your 3 to 5 page essay.
Yeah, there we
really
go.
Yeah,
it's cool. I really recommend, guys. Again, please, if you're listening. It's getting really, really solid, great reviews. It's like just such a, it's a fun, it's also fun despite the heaviness of the, you know, it's also like, it's actually fun to watch. So I recommend it.
Dhruv, okay, you gotta give us,
what was your choice that you
gotta give us
like
the lowdown?
Oh, yeah. Well, in the scene, in the breakfast scene, you know, when the day after the first attack, when she's talking about it, I kind of made the choice where, and I talked to Natasha about it, obviously, where I was like, I think I should play it pretty artificially so that we don't know if he's really feeling, if he's like, if Ted is for real or kind of a cipher, like we don't, you know, what's going on in this scene. And I think though, when I watch it, I'm like, three or four of those lines just come across like bad acting, but they're meant to be. Yeah, I was trying to do it artificial, but if you don't know that's what I'm going for, I don't know. It's a choice I would have changed if I could go back and do it again. That's all. That's what that is.
I liked it.
Yeah. Thank you.
Sammy liked it. Cool. We listen to what Sammy likes. Okay, so
yeah, if Sammy likes it, we like it.
Mm-hmm. Okay, good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And you said this shot super quick. Where did you guys shoot it and when and like how did that all go down?
Yeah, we shot it all in LA. The house is this house in Alhambra. This big old house that they got with the beautiful bay windows. And I think the whole movie was shot in about 2 weeks or maybe a little under that. Wow. And so we just tore through long scenes and got it done. I mean, it was such a gung-ho cool crew. There's something very exciting about working on like an indie movie though, because everyone's doing it as a passion project. Right. No one is being paid as much as they like probably should for their level of talent, like the directors mm-hmm. and the DPs and stuff, but they're all very passionate about it because the script is so interesting and cool.
Right.
And I think also because of that, because Epic Pictures who took a big like risk on it, because when the resources are a little more limited, they give the filmmakers a little more freedom to kind of try interesting weird shit, which is why we have like that cool scene in the garage where we're seeing every woman like a metaphorical movie. Mm-hmm, I think mm-hmm. you only get that when you have the risks of indie filmmaking, so I kind of love that it was on a shoestring.
Did you shoot it during COVID or before COVID?
Before COVID. We were actually slated to open, it was like late 2019. We were supposed to go. We got into the movie was going to open at South by Southwest. I had tickets booked and shit.
Like the March 2020 South by South. Oh.
The one that got canceled. Oh. And I still have not been refunded for my plane tickets. United.
What? United?
I also had to cancel a flight. And same. They gave me credit, which is fuck you. I'm not going on trips for fuck a whole year.
I know. Exactly.
Rude.
But yeah, we were supposed to do South by, and then that, I mean, I do wish it would have been so nice to going to a festival with a movie is the most fucking fun thing I can imagine doing. I haven't done that yet, but yeah, obviously man. That didn't happen. On the bright side, I guess, you know, we got next time, and hopefully more people will see it because of being distributed, you know, on Shudder. Mm-hmm. We'll see what happens with it.
Yeah, we love Shudder here on the pod.
Oh, Drew, thank you for doing this for us. This experiment of. You telling your own movie, you did a great job.
Thank you. I know. I'm sorry. I stumbled a lot on the details because I truly wish I could have remembered it more sequentially. But it's hard when you think. I think of it as such a conglomeration of scenes and stuff. That mm-hmm. It's hard to remember. Yeah.
No, it's great. It was great.
It was so good. Oh, my God. I want to see it now, even though I'm kind of scared.
You can do it. You can do it, Henley. We told you all the parts to cover your eyes.
Okay. All right. I'll close my eyes. Cover my ears.
You're armed with information.
You mentioned something about Easter egg in the masks.
Oh, yes. Yeah, this is a piece from the art department on the movie, also who also killed it. One thing about the mask is every time, God, I forget the name of the person who built the mask. I want to shout him out because he was great too, but I can't remember, so I'm sorry. But the scars on the man's mask, on the mouth, whenever, and then in the garage when we see different men, they spell out the name of whoever they're attacking. So the man says May, kind of in scars, if you look closely.
Spooky.
And then in
so
the garage,
cool.
like the other man says Edie. You know, they all have like the way they're attacking.
That's cool.
Ways,
but, that's really cool.
There were other cool... Oh, yeah, there's also like in the movie around May's house, there are like some little sculptures with a bunch of... like severed fingers, like kind of creepy sculptures, and they say the number of the attack that's happening. So like 2 or number 4 or 3 or whatever.
Oh,
yeah.
That's so cool.
Beautiful little touches for like the hardcore fans.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Ooh, I love that stuff. Me too. Yeah. But you're right, that is like those things that you can just feel like the care that goes into making a movie when you have those things happening where it's like, it doesn't necessarily matter that you notice those things. What you notice is that the movie is made by people doing those things. You know,
yeah.
like that is still what you feel.
I agree.
That's so cool.
And I feel like it's like horror audiences, like the hardcore, you know, horror heads do have, there's a lot of cult movie fandom around those things. And so I feel like they do relish those mm-hmm, like rewatches mm-hmm. where you can spot the little cool things.
Ooh, yeah, that's fun. There's going to be a Reddit page of like, did you guys notice this?
Yeah, definitely.
Mm-hmm. I wish Amoeba Music was open. That's one of my favorite stores because they have like a whole cult section in their DVD place. And I was like, man, I wish I could go see a movie I'm in at Amoeba. That would be so tight right now. But alas.
Hopefully. Wait, is Amoeba closed forever?
I think they say they're reopening, but I don't know. It's hard to say.
I hope they will reopen and that can become a reality for you. I will will that into
Thank
existence.
You.
Me too.
Oh, yeah, thank you. We'll I think we can all agree the worst thing to happen in 2020, 2021 is Dhruv not getting to see it. DVD.
going to Amoeba.
At Amoeba, no. Yeah. The worst thing.
It's the worst thing. Yeah, I really feel for you.
Thank you. Thanks, Emily.
Well, that's it. Thank you so much, Dhruv.
Thanks for having me.
I hope everybody watches Lucky.
Dhruv, thank you so much for joining us.
Oh my God. Thank you so much for having me. Truly. What a treat. I love your guys' spot. It's so fun. And it's perfect. Yeah.
So fun to have you. Usually we try to do a fun voice to say goodbye. I'm not sure if there are any fun voices in this one. Were there? I don't
Just
think
so. Just a silent man.
Mm-hmm. Silent man. Yeah.
A silent man.
The man has his like little sound, like he has a sound theme that accompanies him, you know, musically. That's kind of these weird, distorted, inorganic sounds. But I guess you could do that. But
spooky.
It's kind of hard.
Ooh, let's try to do that. I don't know what
make
that sounds
noise?
Like at
Should
all.
We make little groans? Just...
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, okay. From all of us here at Too Scary Didn't Watch.
Hey everyone, thanks for listening to another episode of Too Scary Didn't Watch. If you had as much fun as we did, head on over to Apple Podcasts where you can rate, review, and subscribe. We're also on Twitter and Instagram at TSDW Podcast, as well as Patreon at patreon.com/TSDW Podcast. Our patrons have access to cool things like 2 bonus episodes per month if you're in Toni Collette's fucking inner circle, as well as bingo cards and other cool, fun things like trailer reactions. Also, as a reminder, we are doing some brackets on our Instagram this week, only doing listener requests because it is March Madness after all. So head on over to our Instagram where you can vote on which film you would like us to recap next. Next week, we'll be doing Misery. That was the first winner of our very first bracket. So watch ahead if you'd like to. Okay, love you guys so much. Adios.